We're having a conversation with Dr. Marnie Vucovic, who is an adolescent psychosocial program manager at Right to Care. A key study by Human Sciences Research on condom use in South Africa indicated that condom use began declining from 2012, despite an increase in condom use from 2002 to 2008. So Dr. Vucovic, who is an adolescent psychosocial program manager at Right to Care, an HIV AIDS nonprofit organization, says that unprotected sex is the most common route of HIV infection among young people. Condoms have been the mainstay for our sexual reproductive health initiatives because they offer protection not only from HIV, but also from other sexually transmitted infections and from unintended pregnancies. But getting young people to use condoms is easier said than done. This is quite scary. Dr. Vucovic, welcome to the show. How are you this afternoon?
Good afternoon, Lee, and thanks for having me on the show.
So let's talk a little bit about just, you know, why there is such a decline, in your opinion, in the use of condoms, especially between young people, I think, aged between 15 and 24 years old.
I think that we really have been missing the boat in terms of providing the education that's necessary. I think we've done a lot, but I think a great deal more can be done to promote responsible sexual behavior. It's not really enough to tell a young person, look, you need to use a condom. We know that that is the best advice possible, but we also have to understand that there are a lot of reasons behind why young people don't use condoms. Mm. And one of them, from my point of view, is that we are not educating them sufficiently.
Would this be at schools or at home or a combination of both?
I think it's across the board. Okay. I think if we can look at sexual and reproductive health and education in schools, that's a big step in the right direction. Mm-hmm. But I think, too, that we really have to be encouraging parents to have open and honest communication with young people around sexual risk and condom use. Mm-hmm. And there have been studies done that have shown that this kind of discussion has actually been associated with increased condom use. But in fact, there are very few discussions that take place with young people prior to the onset of sexual activity. So we need to be helping and encouraging parents to have these kind of conversations. I think that's really very important. I just wanted to touch on the fact that we don't really often think about the effect of the media on condom use.
Yeah, definitely.
And adolescents are exposed to much more sexual content than we imagine. So, for example, films and on the internet. But we don't often see messages that promote responsible sexual behavior, including condom use.
And I think also, you know, in my opinion, I feel like there was a time where we did see a lot more messaging around it, and there was a huge emphasis on, you know, on condom use. But lately, yes, that seems to have dwindled down quite a bit, and it's almost as though, you know, the health of young people doesn't seem to be a priority anymore, just with regards to even getting the message out, you know, to people around HIV/AIDS, which is one of the, you know, the bigger fears around not using a condom.
Absolutely, I agree with you. But coming back to the media point, I think that an interesting survey was conducted in the USA, and they looked at their program content, and they found that 77% of programs had some sexual content, but around about 14% promoted responsible sexual behavior. So we're looking at something that really is quite an influence, and yet that's not, given the fact that there is so much sexual content and that they're exposed to so much, we don't have the associated parental communication, and we're not really providing them with the information that they need. And I think the other thing that we need to do is to start thinking about how we can make condoms more sexy. Mm. We've made an effort. I think that, for example, in the last couple of months, we're looking at the availability of condoms in different flavors. And I think that that's a good starting point. But also that brings me to the female condom. And one of the things that I think was mentioned and that we spoke about was how difficult it is for females to negotiate condom usage.
Because obviously because of inequality, even, you know, for young women in South Africa, there is definitely an inequality.
Absolutely. You've hit the nail on the head. So I think that it's about helping young women to communicate effectively, to be more assertive in terms of their relationships. Mm. But I think that one of the things that we need to think about as well is the availability of the female condom. which essentially, I think, you know, puts power back in the hands of girls. And I think that that's something that perhaps we need to be promoting more actively. And whilst we make male condoms available, female condoms are not that widely available, well, in comparison to male condoms anyway. Mm. And yet they have a number of advantages. You know, they can be inserted 3 hours prior to sex. And a lot of guys say that, you know, they provide more feeling during intercourse. Mm. So I think that that's something we should be focusing on as well.
Okay. We do have a call from Nsako. Nsako, you wanted to make a comment. Good afternoon. What's your comment?
Good afternoon. Actually, I think that since 2008,
yes,
South Africa has gone into an AIDS denialist time, which is ironic since we got rid of a president for saying that he was an AIDS denialist.
Mm.
But I think that if I look at what kids are learning at school, look at how we're talking about HIV. I saw an advert the other day where a guy is coming through to tell a friend that he's HIV positive, and his friend says, "So what's your problem?" I think that the Department of Health in its communications around HIV is maybe making a mistake in trying to make people feel like HIV is not a disease. They're actually also making people feel like condoms have become an unnecessary thing, because it's like diabetes, having HIV.
Mm.
And so how we're communicating about HIV and the fact that, well, now we have this medication that makes it all go away, is actually making young people feel like HIV is not a thing anymore.
Yeah, I actually agree with you. I think, you know, that is one thing that I have noticed as well. We don't see enough around HIV AIDS, you know. It doesn't seem to be as big as a problem as what it really is. You know, it was a statistic. Thank you so much for your call, Nsako. There was a stat, Dr. Fujuk, that came out that said 31% of young South Africans between the age of 15 to 24 have never been tested for HIV AIDS, which alludes directly to what Nsako has been saying, you know, that South Africa is in a situation where we are in denial around HIV AIDS.
Yes, I mean, I think I would support that. And obviously, we want to encourage testing. We want young people to know their status. And it's incredibly important that they do have that test and take responsibility for their own health. And I think in terms of what you're saying, and Swaka mentioned education as well, one of the things that we've tried to do, or we've recognized, particularly in the clinics that we support, is that this aspect is particularly important. So we've introduced for family planning clinics a resource which looks at various topics, and it covers everything from you and your body to contraception to STIs to teen pregnancy, right through to stress and mental health. And I think that it also, by the way, encourages testing. And I think these kind of resources and this kind of educational support is absolutely necessary. You know, obviously we want to avoid complacency about HIV, and we do want young people to know their status.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, when you say about us avoiding complacency, which is perhaps also one of the reasons why we've seen a decline in the usage of condoms in general, mm-hmm. because there is this like complacency. We're not seeing people talk enough about HIV AIDS, around the dangers of it, you know, and obviously, you know, as Nsako had said, now everybody says that, you know, there is a way that you can live with, you know, with HIV AIDS,
yeah.
or, you know, you can get the right medication and all of that. So it's a bit dangerous, you know, because we're not trying to prevent the infection rate from going up.
Yeah, I'd agree with her. I think that we really need to be thinking in terms of testing and testing early.
Mm.
You know, to be complacent and say, oh, well, you know, I'm okay, is really, it's irresponsible in a sense. And I think that every young person, if they could just know their status, have themselves tested, know where they're at, and then, you know, protect themselves accordingly. I think sometimes also there's more of a focus on avoiding pregnancy than worrying about HIV.
Because that seems
which is why we talk about, you know, really the need for dual protection, which is essential.
In case you've just joined us, we're having a conversation with Dr. Mani Vujovic. I hope I said that right. She is an adolescent psychosocial program manager at Right to Care. And we're talking about the decline of condom use in South Africa. You can give us a call if you want to engage with her. The number is 011-883-0702. Do you have an answer perhaps as to why it is that there is a decline in condom usage? And also, do you feel that as a society in South South Africa, we're not really putting enough emphasis on the dangers around HIV/AIDS. Give us a call, 011-883-0702. You can also send us a WhatsApp. The WhatsApp line is 072-702-1702 and SMS on 31702. Now, Dr. Vujovic, let's also talk a bit about some of the other neighboring countries or within sub-Saharan Africa, should I say, that also seem to be in a similar situation.
Yes, you're referring specifically to
Kenya, Nigeria, India, and Mozambique, because it seems like there is a direct parallel between, you know, according to this, the research that came out, between people of lower income and middle and lower income and them not using condoms, you know, and we're seeing this more prevalent around regions like that.
You know, I think it's context specific to a large extent, but okay. I think no doubt there are lessons that we can learn from one another. And this is why this kind of information is helpful. I mean, in our context specifically, we're looking at condom negotiation, for example. So young girls having sexual relationships with older men, and the difficulties of negotiating condom usage in those circumstances. Mm. So I think those kind of skills are really important, and also the perception that, well, if I ask my partner to use a condom, is he actually going to think that I've been unfaithful? Mm. Because of this association between condom usage and casual sex. So there are a whole lot of issues that may pertain more specifically to our situation, mm-hmm. and I think that we need to unpack and address.
And an SMS did come through saying, don't disregard the fact that condoms are an added expense, sometimes unaffordable. Would you agree with that sentiment with regards to the costing and pricing around condoms in South Africa?
Well, look, all I can say from my point of view certainly is that condoms are available within our primary healthcare clinics. Mm. The female and the male condoms should be available at no cost. So they should be accessible. And I think young people also need to be empowered sufficiently to ask when they need to ask. I want a condom, or where can I access a condom? And they need to be easily accessible. So for instance, you know, a young person who's coming in to the clinic, maybe to for some information or for an appointment, who wants to get condoms, but who might feel awkward if the condom box is at the reception desk. Mm. So we need to be kind of sensitive about those sort of issues as well. And also not judging. I think that's incredibly important. I think healthcare providers really need to be sensitive around how difficult it is sometimes for young people to access sexual and reproductive health care. Mm-hmm. They feel that they're judged, regardless of the situation, and it makes it more difficult to access the healthcare system. So I think, you know, if we can make condoms accessible, but we can also make it easy to access information without being judgmental and being sensitive to their needs at the same time.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Vujovic, for spending time with us. So obviously, you know, just to highlight a few things and to summarize part of the conversation, you know, with regards to the declining less people using condoms in South Africa, we need to think about how it is that media can be more involved so we don't act as though HIV/AIDS is not prevalent in South Africa. We also need to talk about the whole conversation around, you know, what the doctor had mentioned with regards to when you look at a lot of TV programs, and she used the example in America, where, you know, about, I think she said over 70% of programming had, you know, some, they had sexual activity within the programming, but there wasn't enough being spoken about with regards, I think it was about 14% with regards to being more careful when you're within the sexual act. So let's talk about all that. Is it a case of being judged? And why do you feel, as a South African, why do you feel that, you know, people are using condoms less and less and less? Give us a call, 011-883-0702, or you can send a WhatsApp, 072-702-1702. Alrighty, let's go straight into our next interview. We're having a conversation with somebody who is a doctor, a digital entrepreneur, and now she's also a Mizani ambassador. So she's in effect a model. Her name is Langa Mgoma. She is sister to a very famous young lady. I'm sure she'll tell us a bit more about that. But we're talking a little bit about the fact that Mizani has now launched an international campaign where they've chosen two South Africans to be part of this global campaign. And these ladies, basically, they take a picture of themselves in their natural hair, but they go for six different looks, because according to studies, the average African woman goes through six different looks a year when it comes to her hair. Langa, good afternoon. Welcome to the show.
Hi,
thank you so much for having me.
So
thank you. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. I'm almost jealous of the fact that you had somebody styling your natural hair in six different ways. That's amazing, especially with the whole natural hair movement. Now, from what I understand, you've had your hair natural for 13 years, right?
Yeah, I think I've lost count. I think since I was 13 years old.
Okay.
Yes, I went natural. And it was basically for me, it was my mom encouraging me to just embrace black beauty and everything about being black. So that was for me the trigger of becoming natural.
Now, obviously, you know, because, you know, as we've mentioned, you're a doctor as well. So with having your natural hair, how did that play? You know, because there's always a conversation about natural hair in quote unquote corporate environments. How were you able to maintain it for that long?
So for me, I've had natural hair for a long time, so I've learned and I've been educating myself along the way and the different hairstyles and, you know, what can be convenient at work, you know, what can hair style I can wear when I'm going out. It's just such a fun experience to just experiment with hair.
Mm.
So for me in the workplace, it hasn't been a problem, and mostly because we wear scrubs a lot, so it's a very uniform working environment.
So you can literally have your hot oil treatment under your scrub. If I were you, that's what I'd be doing. You
know? That actually sounds like a great plan.
Yeah. Now let's talk about how it is that you ended up working with Mizani.
So it was just incredible. Mizani was basically looking for some young influencers to basically represent this global campaign when it comes to natural hair, but just textured hair, different hairstyles. So we played around a lot. It was so much fun.
Mm.
I felt like six different women in one day.
Yeah.
So it's going to be all over the world. It's going to be in the UK. It's going to be in Amsterdam. It's going to be everywhere. And it's going to be such an incredible campaign.
That is quite amazing. But you know what I really love about this whole, because, you know, we've been seeing there's an entire natural hair movement, and it started obviously as, you know, as women of color are starting to embrace the who they are, you know, not be worried about showing, you know, having to look like somebody else. Everybody's more comfortable in looking like themselves. So let's talk about health and, you know, and natural hair and just identity as well. And some things that you learned in a household where your parents and your family was very supportive of you being your most beautiful version in your most natural form. Let's talk about, you know, how you can encourage other young girls just to kind of see themselves as beautiful with the hair that they've been given.
So it's just such an important thing. I think when you grow up, you feel insecure about being different. And for me, I felt very insecure about being different. So what we didn't see ourselves represented in magazines, we didn't see ourselves represented on television. So my idea of beauty was very skewed. So just taking that confidence and believing that the way you created is beautiful is the first step. And then you get to play around and then it's fun. So for me, just taking that step and realizing that diversity is beautiful, different hair textures, different skin colors, all of that, it's beautiful. And for me, I was lucky that at a young age, my parents encouraged that.
Yeah, that is amazing. And your sister also, Nandi, she also has been at the forefront of it. Every time I look at her, I'm just like, she's gorgeous. It's like, you just look at her and you both are extremely beautiful and you just come out and your most natural self comes out, which is amazing as well. Now, let's talk about what exactly this means for you, you know, being a doctor and a digital entrepreneur and now a model. What does this mean for your career moving forward? Are you looking at expanding, so to speak?
So I've always been a person who likes doing many things. Even when I was in high school, I used to go and do drama, just many things. So for me, it's just expanding my passions, and I'm so grateful that I've been given these opportunities.
Mm.
So, I mean, I started off with doing smaller campaigns, and then to be I'm so honored that they approached me for a global campaign, which is really an honor. So for me, it's just about expanding passions in the medical field, in digital entrepreneurship, and in modeling.
And now because you are in the medical field, obviously there are a lot of health benefits just in general with regards to having natural hair, because sometimes having overly texturized hair, they have been, you know, there has some research has come about how that is not always healthy, you know, for young girls.
So I guess, you know, the thing that's so amazing is that we're learning more and more. So we're learning the science behind different hair textures and, you know, what treatments work and how to take care of it. So for me, from a young age, my mom always encouraged me to become natural as a hair protective mechanism. But it's so incredible to be able to play around with different hairstyles with knowing about what's healthy for hair. And I guess now there's information that's accessible, and that's a great thing.
That is amazing. Now, I want to put you on the spot and ask you a few questions, rapid fire. So are you ready?
I don't know if I'm ready, but I'll try.
Alrighty. So who is your natural hair crush? It has to be a celebrity, and it can't be your sister.
Oh, no.
Yeah, because then, you know, we have to be fair. I knew you were going to say that. So who is your natural hair crush?
I'd say Erykah Badu.
Yes.
She goes big and bold.
And so you love big and bold. Okay. Yes. And then which celebrity do you think would look gorgeous in natural hair? Who would you love to see in natural hair?
Who would I love to see?
Yeah, without their weave, without their wig, all of that. Which celebrity would you like to see in their natural hair?
I think there's so many beautiful South African celebrities, and I think I'd like to see them all with their natural hair.
You're dodging the question. You're like, no, I don't want to say anything, because if I say this, then I'm going to be tweeted at. But Langa, no, I totally understand. But thank you so much for spending time with us. Congratulations. I'm on this international campaign with Mizani and really celebrating natural hair and natural beauty. And also congratulations for always just being a young, confident African woman and carrying that everywhere that you go and being happy in your natural African crown.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. It was such a pleasure being on your show. Thank you for inviting me.
Cool. Take care. Thank you so much. Just a few WhatsApp messages before we go to Eyewitness News. SMS is coming through before we go to Eyewitness News. Our young South Africans are enjoying flash-to-flash sex. They are not prepared to practice safe sex. Another one saying, what is the law with regards to sale of condoms to young people? I was in a petrol station where the teller refused to sell a pack of condoms to a teenage boy. I actually stepped forward and bought them for him. That's very interesting.